Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meira, and today we'll be learning Parshat Bereishis. We're starting a new cycle. This parsha has 146 psukim, and it covers 5 prakim, 5 chapters, with an additional 8 psukim. So what I would like to do is go through the first 7 aliyahs very briefly, just so we have an overview and an understanding what the parsha discusses. And then I would like to look at one particular idea that I feel has relevance to us in our daily lives. So the first aliyah discusses the 6 days of creation, the first day Hashem made light, the second day Hashem formed the heavens, on the third day Hashem delineated between land and sea, and on the part of earth that is now land, Hashem created trees and greenery. On the fourth day, Hashem created the sun, the moon, and the stars. The fifth day, Hashem created the birds, the fish, and the reptiles. On the sixth day, Hashem made animals and man, and on the seventh day, Hashem rested, thereby creating Shabbos. The second aliyah now goes back to the story of the creation of man and fills in more details how Hashem collected earth and breathed into him a living soul and planted him in Gan Eden and instructed him to eat from all the trees in the garden except from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, Etz Hadat. And the aliyah ends off with Adam naming all the animals and birds. In the third aliyah, Hashem puts Adam to sleep and creates for him an Ezer Kenegdo. We translated a helper against him. That is a whole different class what that means. And they live together in the Garden of Eden. At this point, the woman is called Isha. The Nachash, which we translate as a snake, but we don't really know what it was the wisest of all the animals, and it tempts Isha to eat from the fruit to disobey Hashem's command. The woman then gives Adam from the fruit, and Hashem punishes the snake, the woman, and the man, and expels them all from Gan Eden. In the fourth aliyah, this is the post-Gan Eden life, Isha, her name is changed to Chava, mother of mankind, and she gives birth to 2 children, Cain and Hevel. Cain is a farmer, Hevel is a shepherd, and then Cain wants to give a korban to Hashem. Hevel copies him, and Hashem takes Hevel's offering, not Cain's. Cain is devastated, and he murders his brother Hevel. Hashem punishes him, and he curses him that in 7 generations' time, he will also be killed. And we start listing the generations of Cain. The 5th aliyah tells us the 6th and the 7th generation of Cain. In the 6th aliyah, Lamech accidentally kills his ancestor Cain, bringing the curse to fruition. And then we see Adam and Chava have one more child called Chase. We now chronicle the generations from Adam through Chase. We continue in the 7th aliyah till we get to Noah. And then the parasha finishes off that Hashem regrets creating mankind, that man had degenerated. And it finishes off, but Noah found favor in Hashem's eyes. That is the story of creation. Now Rashi asks a very famous question. Why do we start with the story of Bereishis? Why don't we go straight to the first mitzvah, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem? And Ramban challenges Rashi. He says, what do you mean, why don't we start with Bereishis? Of course we have to start with Bereishis. It's a fundamental belief of Judaism that God created the world and there was nothing before him. Why would you not want to start with Bereishis? So Ramban clarifies Rashi's question. He says, we know that the details of creation are written extremely sparse and esoterically. We're not supposed to go into it in detail. It's one of the hidden secrets of the Torah. So why would you possibly start the Torah, which is meant for everyone to study, with something that people are discouraged from going into great detail? Why not start with something that everyone wants to learn, needs to learn, is encouraged to learn, like the first mitzvah? Now, I'm not going to go into either Rashi or Ramban's answer because I want to unpack the question a little bit more that we understand it. The period of the Parsha of Bereishis, just the Parsha of Bereishis, is 1,500 years. That is a very long period of time. If you were a historian trying to chronicle what happened in a millennium and a half, what would you think would be the key events that you would start with? So we have the story of creation, which is already very hidden, very few details given. Then we have the story of Adam and Chava in the Garden of Eden. We don't know what the fruit was, we don't know what the trees, we're not quite sure what happened, but it definitely drastically altered the course of mankind. Then we have the story of the first sibling rivalry and murder, and then the revenge of that murder, and lots of genealogies, and then Hashem is disappointed for creating the world. That's not a lot of detail. And then to compound it, if you are going to be so brief, why not be consistent? But no, we have to have a repetition at the beginning of the parasha. We have 2 different narrations about the formation of man. One is just one pasuk, and then one is more detailed. And then at the end, we have two genealogies of the descendants of Adam. Now, first of all, I don't even understand why we need the genealogy of the first son, Cain. Cain's line gets wiped out. When Cain is killed and the last descendants are destroyed in the flood, we don't have anyone left from Cain. Why do we need his genealogy? And even if you do feel it's necessary, the second son, who will eventually have Noah and humanity carries on from him, his names in his genealogy are very similar to the names of Cain's descendants. So some names are exactly the same. You will have a Chanoch and a Chanoch. You have a Lemech and a Lemech. Some names are slightly different, like you have a Mechuyael and Mahalalel, and you have a Irad and a Yered. Why do we need two genealogies? And why are they so similar but different? What is going on? So the two things I want to understand is, what is the significance of the very random stories that have been included in Bereishis? And what is the significance of the dual narration in the beginning and the dual genealogy in the end? Is there some way to wrap this all up together? So there is a famous midrash that asks, why does this Torah start with Bereishis, specifically with the letter Bet? It would make sense to start the Torah with Aleph, the very first letter of the Aleph Beis. The Midrash explains, V'lama bevet, why is the Torah starting with a bet? Shehu lashon bracha, because it's the language of blessing. V'lama lo ba'alef, and why not with the Aleph? Shehu lashon arura, because this is a language of curse. Which means Hashem infused into the world when he created it, bracha. And we see this when Hashem created the world. It says he saw it was good and he blessed it. He said, Pru uravu umilu et ha'aretz. Hashem says that for the first time on the fifth day. But then what happens? Mankind comes and we disobey Hashem and we bring curse into the world. And this is very much the story of Parshat Bereshit, Sefer Bereshit, and all of humanity, where Hashem infuses the world with bracha, and he only wants us to have good, and we, with our actions, subvert that good, and we bring curse into the world. How does that work? What is the process? When Hashem creates the world, every step of the way, except for the second day, it says, Hashem saw, and it was good, and Hashem saw, and it was good. And then it says, Vayivarech Atam Elokim. So Hashem pronounces something as good, and then he fuses it with blessing. To be clear, good is not a taste preference. Good means a moral distinction. This is good, this is evil. So Hashem delineates what is morally good, and then Hashem blesses it. What did Chava do when Chava had her discussion with the Nachash in the Garden of Eden? How did the snake tempt her? He said, V'yitem ke'elokim, you'll be like God. Yodea tovara, you can decide what's good and bad. You can substitute your own moral system if you eat from this fruit. And sure enough, the next pasuk says, V'tereh ha'isha, and the woman saw, ki tov ha'etz, the tree is good. She's deciding now what's good. And what did that result in? It resulted in the curses. What happens at the end of the parasha? We have a pasuk that talks about the B'nei HaElohim. This doesn't mean God. It means a person of power, a judge, a ruler, an angel. So these B'nei HaElohim were people who felt very godly. They appropriated power that they weren't supposed to have. And what did they do with that power? They saw the daughters of mankind, ki tovot heina. And they started taking women who they wanted. And this led to immorality. So again, they are assuming godly powers. They are substituting their perception of good. And this led to the destruction of the world. And just in case you think that this is a random connection, we have a scene in the very middle of the parsha, which ties it all together. When Cain brought his sacrifice and Hashem chose his younger brothers over his own and he was devastated, there's a very short dialogue between Hashem and Cain. And Hashem says to Cain, Halo in teitiv seis, ve'im lo teitiv lepesa chatas rovets, ve'alecha tishukoso. Hashem is telling him, Halo in teitiv, if you, this is how Abar Banel explains it, if you do what I, Hashem, command you as good, that I've decided is good, sa'es, you'll be lifted, you'll be blessed. Ve'im lo teitiv, but if you do not do what I say is good, lepetach chatas rovet, sin is crouching at the door. It's ready to pounce on you and it's going to rule over you. This is the key to living a blessed life. When we follow what Hashem wants us to do, we have bracha. But when we subvert our own idea of what is good, right, then we bring curses to ourselves. So what does this have to do with the repetitions at the beginning and the end of the parsha? So it's actually very easy to just be a good person and mindlessly go through life if you have no choice. Just be like a robot, whatever you're told to do, do, and then you'll get bracha. Is that the type of life that Hashem wanted? Did Hashem wanted legions of submissive people just doing whatever he said? Rav Soloveitchik has a wonderful essay called The Lonely Man of Faith, where he discusses the discrepancy between the two narrations of man, and he highlights four differences. We're just going to look at two for the purpose of our discussion, and he calls them Adam 1 and Adam 2. Adam 1 is created B'Tzelem Elokim. We don't know anything about how he's created, just Vayivra Elokim et Adam, Hashem created man, B'Tzalmo, in his image, B'Tzelem Elokim bara Adam, in his image he created him. This is very much stressed. And Rav Soloveitchik says that the way this is expressed is in his desire to be creative, to strive, to be. And what commandment is this Tzelem Elokim Adam given? He is told, Pru urevu umilu et haaretz, be fruitful, multiply, fill the land, v'kivshuha, and conquer it. This is a man with extreme creativity and ambition and drive. His task is to rule the world. But then we have a second man. This one is much more detailed. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim et Adam. Hashem fashioned man. Afar min ha'adama, dust from the earth. Vayipach ba'pav nishmat chaim. And he breathed into him a breath of life. This is a humble man who is created from dust, but he carries inside of him a piece of Hashem. And what is his mission? Hashem put him, vayanichehu b'gan Eden, in Gan Eden, la'avda u'lashamra, to guard and to protect. So we see a duality in the function of man. On the one side, he's Tzelem Elokim, creative, ambitious, and his job is to rule the world. Then we have a second man who's Afar Min Ha'adama, who's humble, but who carries Nishmat Chaim, a neshama, piece of Hashem inside of him, and his job is La'ovda u'lashamra. How do these two aspects of Adam play out? Well, let's look at the genealogy at the end of the parasha. You have the line of Cain. The line of Cain is extremely creative. Cain himself invents the first city. His descendants are the ones who invent weapons and musical instruments and herding cattle for profit. But what happens? Instead of being B'Tzelem Elokim, you hear a whisper of what the snake said to Chava, V'yitem ke'elokim. Instead of being in the image of God, they appropriate godliness for themselves. And what is the ultimate expression of God? Giving life and taking life. They commit the first murder. Cain murders his brother, and his descendant murders Cain, and the line eventually ends because of murder. When you have unchecked ego, creativity and that drive for ambition takes over a person, it results in murder. What's the other line? The line of Shais. Shais's first child was called Enosh, and it said about him, Azucha likra b'shem Hashem, they were seeking God. But the Midrash explains to us they were seeking God in the wrong way, and eventually they lost their way and started worshipping idols. Two of the descendants, Chanoch and Noach, were told, walked with God. V'yisalech Chanoch et Elokim, Chanoch walked with God. But because he could not maintain his high level of righteousness, he died young so that he could at least die a tzaddik. And the same thing we see with Noach, et Elokim hitalech Noach. Noach walked with God. This is more next week's parasha, but Noach is not able to lo'avda l'shamra. He can't connect his people to Hashem. He can only connect himself. That's also a failure. So we see the two lines of Adam each fail in their respective interpretation of Adam's mission. One gets taken over by his ego, and one, while searching for God, gets lost, and even the ones who found God are not able to bring the people with them. As we continue through the five books of the Torah, we see each successive generation struggling to unite these two aspects, the Tzelem Elokim and the Afar Min Adama, and to Milu Et Haaretz V'Kivshuha, conquer the world, and La'avda L'Shamra, guard and protect. These two missions and these two aspects of humanity struggle with each other throughout the five books of the Torah, until finally the very last parasha, we see one person who embodied a synthesis of all of this. The very last parasha is V'zot HaBracha, this is the blessing, Asher Barach Moshe Ish HaElokim. Moshe is the man who can tap into the bracha in the world. He can actively tap into the bracha of the world because he is the one who follows Hashem's morality code. And he has both aspects. He's Isha Elokim, he's creative. He takes the Jews out of Egypt. He is Hashem's messenger to execute the 10 plagues. He brings down the Torah. But he's also Afar Min Adama. We know Moshe is the most humble of all mankind. And not only that, he spends 40 years looking after the Jewish people, giving them man, getting them water, listening to all their complaints, and shepherding them through the desert. he is able to synthesize the two aspects of what a human being should be. And this is why at the end of his life, he is able to bless. So how do we put this all together? We've just spent 40 intense days connecting to Hashem. From Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and now we're going out into the world. Some of us are going to be B'tzelem Elokim. We're going to Mil'u Et Ha'aretz V'Kivshuha. We are ambitious. We want to accomplish. And we have to be very careful to stick to being B'tzelem Elokim and not superimposing our own ego and thinking V'yitem Elokim, we can be like God. Then we have other people who are Afra Min Adama. They're struggling with things. They're trying to find themselves. They're looking for the Ruach Nishmat Chaim inside of themselves. They've got to find Hashem in their challenges and in their everyday life. And our mission as we go into the world is to synthesize this, to create and do, but at the same time, find Hashem in what we do and help the world to find Hashem. And by sticking to Hashem's morality code and doing what Hashem says is tov, we will bring good and bracha to ourselves and the people around us and really fulfill our mission and have a wonderful, sweet year. Have a great week.